At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, everyone, this episode of Nothing Major is sponsored by Vuori. I actually owned Vuori pre-doing this ad, and I would wear it to pick the kids up at school. I'd wear it to the gym. For me, Vuori stuff is all about versatility and comfort.
Yeah, and I've got their core short on right now. I pretty much live in those shorts. They're the most comfortable shorts that I have probably ever owned in my life. And, you know, I've got a couple pairs pretty much that are in my rotation at all times, and, you know, I can't wait to get those shorts on every day when I get up.
Where's Vuori? Where you live too?
I know. I'm about 200 yards from the shop right now, actually from my house. So I might actually walk down there later and see if I can get this in-store discount, but I might have to go online.
It's trendy. It's trendy right now. If I go pick up the boys at school, the dads and the moms, they're all wearing
Vuori.
So guys, use that 20% off. Vuori.com/nothingmajor. Head there now.
Up ahead on this Friday edition of Nothing Major is something we mentioned on Monday. World number 3, Alexander Zverev. On the pod. Hope you guys enjoy. Let's get this started. All right, welcome back to Nothing Major. Alexander Zverev is on the show today. How did we get him on the pod?
I feel like you can answer your own question there.
Well, I reached out to him, right? Like any of us could have.
I feel like you can answer that.
Any of us could have reached out to him. Like I think what we do on the pod is like, you know, like we have a lot of great relationships. Obviously, it's being somewhat still current, somewhat relevant with the current guys on tour. So we're not reaching out to players every single week, but I think spacing him out and getting someone like World Number 3 was a great get for us, and he was so accommodating, on time, great answers. We had so much fun with this, so one of our best interviews for sure.
I think it was maybe my favorite interview we've done.
Yeah,
that was a good one. Really enjoyed it.
Jack was playing pickleball in my home here in Dallas. He had a match or something, but anyways, it was good. It was really good. His answers were awesome. So let's get into it. Hope you guys enjoy. Okay, guys, welcome back to Nothing Major. We have a very special guest coming on the pod right now. None other than Alexander Zverev joining Nothing Major from Toronto. And most importantly, Alex, we have to start with this. We're called Nothing Major. You're a fellow non-major winner.
Yeah.
To date, you're a fellow non-major winner. The best player in our minds, we've not won a slam yet, and we're so excited that you're joining the pod. So really appreciate your time, and how's it going over there in Toronto?
Thanks for making the time. Appreciate it.
I mean, John asked me about you, so
we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
That's why you're here.
Just settle some beef here today.
No, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's going good. I just got here last night, so, you know, still a bit jet lagged, still not very fresh, but, you know, happy to be back on tour playing again. Took a longer time off, which I usually don't do. But it was nice for me. I spent some time with the family. I spent some time on holidays as well. So it was a good summer for me, even though, you know, I kind of lost first round Wimbledon, which is a disappointment. But I was never going to win Wimbledon anyways. So, you know, so it was okay for me.
You're, of course, not used to losing first round at Grand Slams like the rest of us are. We think you'll be all right. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of this interview, we want to start with this. There's been some well-documented beef between you and this podcast, specifically with Mr. Sam Querrey. Is that beef settled? And
no.
Did it start because he left you out of the hottie bracket? That was his brainchild event.
No,
and he did not put you in the draw.
I don't consider myself a Matteo Berrettini or Tommy Paul of the tour, so that's fine. No, there's listen, there's three things that I think Sam Querrey hates more than anything else in life.
Ooh.
That's
Ooh.
American tennis players that are not him.
Okay.
Anybody born in the 1990s, he's fine with the 1980s and fine with the 2000s.
Fair.
And me. And I think I'm number one by a long way in anything that he hates. But that's fine because I prefer when he doesn't pick me for tournament wins or anything like that, because that usually means I lose first round. So, Sam, don't ever do that again. That's okay for me.
That is true. On the pod, when we pick guys to do well, they never do well.
They don't.
Well, like, no, you. Ever. Whenever you pick someone, they don't do well.
That's no, true. It's collective.
It's collective. We're all it's pretty collective. Bad.
Okay.
But
we're all pretty bad.
Well, then how about that? Just pick Yannick Sinner or Carlos Alcaraz for the year. So
I just promise to not pick you to do well the rest of the year.
Yes, thank you. I'll like, probably win
the rest of his career.
The rest of your career, yes. Not picking you.
I'll probably win like 8 majors from now on.
My rebuttal for the hottie bracket, at least I'll say, I left you, Carlos, and Yannick out. At the time, you were ranked 2, Carlos or Yannick 1, Sinner 3. You guys had such big fan bases already. I didn't want to put you in there and then have the fan bases just attack the voting.
I'm pretty sure that's not the reason why you left us out, but that's okay.
No, that is the reason.
I'm fine. I forgive you. That's okay.
All right. I feel like we're good though.
We're good.
We've been
we're
on good. The desk together now at the tournament four times.
I actually love Sam, and he knows that I do, and I just give him a hard time whenever I see him. So that's fine. I don't have any issues with any of you guys.
The hard time you gave him at Indian Wells, he texted us. He's like, I had this interaction with Zverev, and like, I really think he doesn't like me. So you're doing a great job. He was confused. So
listen,
great job.
I don't if I don't like someone, I just walk past them. I don't talk to them.
Yeah.
Like if I all like right, someone, I'm going to give you a hard time. So don't worry. You're like, you're all on right. a good side of mine.
I'm getting the stop and chat from you every time. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we did some quick research with your career record against this podcast. It's very good, Alex.
Well, the only one I have a lost record against is Jack.
No, 2-2.
2-2?
Yeah, you're 2-2.
Okay. The only thing I know, I never lost a set to Sam. That's the only thing that
yes.
I
messed.
That is true. Yeah, I told these guys, you're 3-0 against me, and like it's never been remotely close.
No, it was a 7-6 set once.
Okay, 1-7-6. All right, one breaker.
I beat Sam quite easy once at the U.S. Open. That I remember, first round.
You got a loss to Steve Johnson. You remember that one?
Yeah, I was 17.
Oh.
Hey. Hey now.
A W.
W. Yeah. And let's not. Hey, hold on. You had a worse loss in Miami in 2018 than against me.
That was the last ever match with Kiwis Kane as well. Oh Jesus! Was that the only time you beat me?
I'm 2-7 against you.
You beat me,
but I beat you there. Okay. I'm glad to hear that my biggest career win is also Alex's worst career loss.
No, it's not my worst career loss. Trust me, I've had plenty of other losses where I served about 25 double faults a match and. There were much, much worse losses than you.
Alex, you know this. In Tampa, Florida, at the Saddlebrook Resort is where I trained for the most of my career.
Yeah.
And I'm about 13 years older than you. And I remember you were in Tampa. Your brother was playing professional tennis. Misha obviously had a fantastic career. You're much younger than him. You would practice with us at 13, 14 years old. And quite honestly, I did not like practicing with you because you were so good. At 14 and would beat me. And I am at like 27 years old, and maybe I was top 10 in the world at the time. So I knew that you were going to be really good. I think a lot of people did. But did you personally, Alex, did you think that you were going to reach the lofty heights that you've had so far in your career when you were a junior?
So I wasn't actually that good when I was like 14. I was okay, but I was not like the best. I mean, our generation is quite strong in the regards of depth, right? We have like Daniil Medvedev, we have Khachanov, we have Rublev, we have Kyrgios back in the day. We have so many guys that are such good players. And I wasn't better than them. There was like a European competition, an American competition, like Stefan Kozlov, if you remember, he was like making me look like a fool sometimes on the court when we were 14. He was beating me like 11-1. I started being good at the age of 16. I grew a lot at the age of 15. I had like a growth spurt of like 15, 20 centimeters that year. And then at the age of 16, I remember I started being good. I mean, I finished the year number one in the world in juniors under 18. But before that, I was okay, but I was never like the best. But then from the age of 16, yeah, that's when I kind of had my growth spurt. And then, yeah, I started playing much better. I had my first like big results in the senior tour. But I think my brother also helped me a lot when it came to the senior tour. And also you guys at Saddlebrook helped me a lot when it came to the senior tour. Because when I got to the senior tours, it wasn't new to me, right? So like I've seen it kind of before my brother. I practiced with a lot of you guys in Saddlebrook as well. So it wasn't like a shock moment when I started playing against you guys. So that helped me a lot to kind of be familiar at a very early age. But yeah, I think, I mean, obviously other people caught up as well, and other people have had incredible careers as well. But I think the reason why I kind of started playing well in senior tour so early was because I kind of have seen it before with my brother as well.
And everyone knows, all tennis fans know, that your parents have always been by your side. They've been, you know, coaching you your whole life. How integral of a role have they played in your success and your brother's success on tour? Because as I mentioned before, Misha was an incredible player.
I think a lot of people, I mean, they know that my dad has been coaching me for quite a while in my senior career, but the one that taught me tennis was my mom. Back in the day, I don't know if you remember, I mean, my dad was always on the court with my brother, and he was kind of always with him. And my mom was the one that taught me how to play tennis, taught me the technique, spent the hours on court when I was very, very young. And she was the one that kind of got me into tennis more than anybody else in my family. And then obviously, when I got older, my father started coaching me. We started traveling together with my brother as well. But, you know, the most credit towards my tennis career definitely has my mom.
Speaking of you and Misha, you guys played once on tour, 2018 in Washington. Where were your parents sitting? Who were they rooting for? Did you feel bad taking down your big brother in that moment?
Well, we actually played one more time in Houston, but we played in qualies in 2014.
Oh, I remember that.
In 2014.
What a treat for the fans to watch.
Yeah, 2014. And actually, not a lot of people know that, but he knows that. We played a very long three-set match. We played for like 3 hours. And then it was like 3-2 in the third set. I think I was up 3-2 in the third set with a break. And I felt so bad to beat him that I pulled out. I pulled out. I couldn't beat him. I just couldn't do it. And it was funny because it was, remember back in the day, it was like you had to play quality. You had to play like 2 matches a day and to qualify and then play the next day. So Timo De Backer, who played like a college guy, he won like Love and One, his first match. And he was waiting for us to play again. And like, I knew I was 16 years old. I was not going to play another match. I was completely physically done. So I pulled out at 3-2 in the final set to let my brother play against Timo De Backer. And my brother actually, I think he went 3 sets with Timo De Backer and then like lost Love in the third because he was completely dead from our match. So That was the first time that we played. But then, yeah, the second time was 2018. I think I was number 3 in the world already. And in 2017, the year before, I won Washington and I won Montreal. So I had a lot of points to defend. I'm not sure, but like he had set point in the second set and I served to his back end, and his back end, you know, is money. He returned that serve outside of doubles alley with the middle. So I'm not sure if it was on purpose or not. I don't want to say anything, but I think he knew that I had a lot of points to defend.
Obviously, you were so young then, and I mentioned before, like, we have a lot of history together. We used to practice, not all the time, at Saddlebrook. Alex, you remember we used to practice at my friend's house?
Yeah.
And after practice was over, they'd ask me, like, John, like how good is he going to be? And I said, I think he's going to be really good, top 5 for sure. They always text me to this day. And they remember the fact that they, you know, you drove up 20 minutes to practice with me. That wouldn't be the case now.
Yeah, you're going to him now.
I would still do that.
I appreciate that.
I'm a very easygoing guy. I would still do that.
You're currently sitting at number 3 and you're number 4 in the race. For mere mortals, that's a very, very good year. We all know you made the finals of Australia. You won Munich. But how would you assess your year so far to date?
Terrible year. I mean, a lot of the times I felt quite lost on the court this year, especially after the Australian Open final, where You know, I've had another Grand Slam final. I actually went into the match believing, like, I'm going to win this. Like, this is my third fight. I'm going to win it. Because the other two finals I lost in five sets. I had a lot of chances. You know, I lost to Carlos the year before at the French Open, which for me is one of the toughest challenges playing Carlos on clay right now. So I was going into the match, like, I was feeling so confident. And then in that match, I got smoked. Like, he was doing everything better than me at that moment. Like, I was serving better than him, but apart from the serve, he literally did everything better than me. And I came off the court and I was like, wow, I have no idea. I just didn't know what the hell to do. So I kind of like had a really tough time mentally after that match. And I feel like I did a few mistakes. After that, I went, instead of, you know, going home, resting, kind of realizing what happened and, you know, working through it. I went home. I spent like 3 days at home, and then I went straight to Argentina. Went straight to Argentina, you know, after playing in Grand Slam final. I had the most amazing time in Argentina outside the court. But on the court, it was like, okay, I'm playing on clay in South America. A few days after I made another Grand Slam final, I'm playing terrible. My motivation is like not the same. So I shouldn't have done that looking back. Even though it has nothing to do with the country, it has nothing to do with the place, I would visit it again. But playing a tournament straight after was a mistake. And then it kind of had a little bit of a burnout, you know, for a couple of months there. I mean, I wasn't feeling very motivated to play. I wasn't feeling very motivated to practice. I was not like enjoying my time on the court. And I was losing a lot of, you know, quite bad matches. So I was losing a lot of matches from winning positions. I was losing to players which I shouldn't lose to. You know, and I paid the price for that. You know, you live and you learn, kind of, in a way. But I do believe that, you know, the Wimbledon first round was not a great thing for me, for sure. But I think I made the best out of it. I pulled out of a few tournaments now. I took some time off. And I do feel fresher. I do feel fresher in my mind to kind of compete again. And, you know, maybe I'm not going to play my best tennis here in Canada. Or maybe I'm not going to play my best tennis in Cincinnati. But I think by the time the US Open comes, I'm going to be a contender again. And that's where I want to be.
Yeah, you kind of talk about...
I mean, a contender in my eyes, not in Sam's eyes, but in my eyes.
Yeah.
I've got you penciled in to make a third round, like, on if you're playing great.
Thank you. Yeah. Just leave it at that.
Do you think, like, your bar's been set so high the last 5 years because you've been playing so well? Not in my eyes, but in other people's eyes. starting now, like, do you think you'll play more of, like, a schedule of 15 to 18 tournaments and really try to peak at the slams, like you said? Like, that is like the main goal, to get a slam.
The thing is, I would love to, but with how the ATP has done the tournaments nowadays, it's impossible to. Like, how are you going to do that, right? You have the nine Masters 1000 events, which are mandatory, which are, most of them are 2 week long events nowadays, except Monte Carlo and Paris-Bercy, which I think are the best 2 weeks nowadays, because you're kind of in and out. I think for a fan and for also for every single tennis player, like, Paris-Bercy was awesome last year. I mean, I won it, which was more, even more awesome for me. But, you kind of get there, you play your five matches, and you get out of there. Like, you don't have to stick around. You don't have to practice in between matches. You don't have to do all those things. That's how Masters events used to be, and I think all the players loved it. You know, now the ATP has made four mandatory 500 events for you to play, like, which used to be three, now it's four. So you kind of don't really get under 20 events, except if you are pulling out of those big events. I'm not a fan of where this is going because, you know, if you take Alex Deminor, for example, his example last year, he played his last match at Davis Cup, I think the 25th of November, and played the first match at United Cup this year, the 27th of December. So, like, you have a month of off season. Like, how are you going to take 2 weeks off? How are you going to prepare your body for a new season? How are you going to train enough tennis? Like, you don't have the time to do all those things anymore. So I think this is one subject where the ATP has to really think about it and kind of find a solution a little bit as well. And to be honest, I've not heard a single player say that they love the 2 week Masters events. I don't even think fans like that.
No.
Like,
no.
They don't like waiting for 2 days for their favorite player to play again. Like, it's, yeah. I understand tennis is a business, but I'm not sure that business plan is working very well right now.
Speaking of this year, There's been rumors or pictures. You got Tony Nadal on the court with you.
Say Nadal again.
Nadal?
Nadal, okay.
I think there was a glitch, internet glitch.
So American, phenomenal.
Hey, we had to ask about this one, Alex. So.
You think we're going to see Tony with you a little bit more this year? Or was that just like a one-off? He helped you for a handful of days.
I was expecting that question. I'm going to give you how it is. I loved the week. I enjoyed it a lot. I think Tony enjoyed it as well. I spent quite a lot of time with Rafa as well, which was very nice of him to do. I'm not sure how much you're going to see of Tony this year because his schedule is quite packed, right? Like he's giving a lot of speeches. He has a lot of things to do with the academy. I think starting from next year, you might see him a lot more.
After Wimbledon, I ran into you on the grass briefly after your loss. You did ask me to coach you in Toronto. I was waiting for a follow-up call. I just never got it. I wasn't sure. Like,
he found someone
where we
better,
stood.
Sam. Much better.
I was willing to go to Toronto.
Listen. My goal is to win a slam. You or Tony Nadal, who do you think might have a bit more experience than that?
Good point. I'll send you my resume
later
in the year,
just in case.
For Sam
on that one.
You did beat my brother in the fourth round of the US Open. So I remember he smoked John in the third round.
He beat me in the third round on Ash, and then you beat him on Ash.
So. Yeah.
Your brother was nasty. I hated playing him. He had unbelievable volleys. What happened to your volleys, Alex?
Well, listen, he had unbelievable volleys because he couldn't play for the baseline. I kind of...
His volleys were so good.
You know, but it was funny because I think 2017 or 2018, it was like a year where you played the Zverev brothers like 10 times. Like, you couldn't get a break from us at all. Like, and I think the record was like 9-1, something like that for us.
Yeah.
If you had to have one of the big three, Roger, Rafa, Novak, assume Novak's got free time, travel and coach you for a year, which one are you picking?
Wait, hold on. I'm cramping. Wait, sorry.
No, you're good.
Dang. He's probably like practicing
harder
than
we did. That's
going to
be a good social clip right there.
I wonder when he's coming back.
He's going down the street like Gasquet to get a new laptop.
Give him some water. There he is.
Sorry. I'm back.
Yeah, drink some water, dude.
What was the question?
Of the big three, in this hypothetical scenario, Novak is retired. Which one of the big three you think would make the best coach for you?
Before spending the week with Rafa and Tony in Mallorca, I would have said probably Novak. Cramping again. Jesus.
You think it's the leg? Where is he cramping? I can't tell if he's cramping his like pec or his legs.
It looked like his shoulder.
Oh.
I never...
This is really funny.
This is good.
Maybe it's the question. I don't.
The question's so tough.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
Where were you cramping? Arm? Shoulder?
I'm cramping in my abs.
I've never had that problem. I don't have any abs.
Oh. First day here, I practiced for 6 hours.
Is it hot there?
It was very hot. So before spending the week with Tony and Rafa, I would have probably said Novak because I had the most conversations with him and, you know, he kind of gave me a lot of advice. But spending the week in Mallorca, the intensity that Rafa played at, that's the intensity he coaches at. Like, it was unbelievable.
Wow.
We had dinners and I'm so thankful for that. Like, he was unbelievable. But we had like dinners until like 1 a.m. together. And like in the middle of dinner, he would stand up and like do swinging forehands and show me what technique he wants me to improve on and stuff like that. Like, it was unbelievable how into it he was.
Were there other people at the restaurant or were these like private dinners?
No, it was other people.
So they're looking at Rafa in between the tables, like shadowing forehands?
Yeah. No, it was fine.
It's amazing.
It's Mallorca. It's like he owns Mallorca.
He does.
But like, it was unbelievable how into it he was. And I was so surprised because I actually thought, well, I played Rafa for 10 years of my career. I thought, well, yeah, he's going to have a nice dinner just to kind of come there and be nice to me. But like he was so into it. And he came on court with me as well and like started showing me forehands, like trying to improve my forehand. Like, that day when he came on court to me, I played for him like Ernest Gubis, to be honest, because I was still married. But like it was phenomenal to see, and I was so surprised, and I was so thankful to him, because I guess that's not normal, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't have to do that. Like he's Rafa Nadal. Like who the hell am I to him? You know what I mean? So it was incredible to see, and I was so surprised. So I'll probably pick Rafa right now.
You know, what are his thoughts? Is it more of a mental change for you? Is it a big change on the tennis court? You know, what does he feel like is like a missing piece for you?
He told me during the week, I don't know how many times he told me, I need to be more brave. Right? I need to take it on to myself in the most important moments. And I know that as well, but hearing it from someone like him, like I played him in some of the big matches, right? I played him Roland Garros a few times. And we had big matches. He always told me, like, when you're aggressive, it's so difficult to hurt you, because I could always move quite well. So I could kind of find the aggressive game from difficult positions. But it's kind of when I hold back, that's when I become vulnerable. That's when I kind of like become one dimensional as well. Like I don't have the surf and volley like my brother, or I don't have like a good drop shot or a good slice like Novak or someone like that. So for me, when I kind of become passive, that's when I'm more hurtable for the top guys. And he always told me, like, he truly believes, and I think I believe him, that he believes that I can win a Grand Slam. Like he told me that a million times. But if I become more brave, and if I kind of take it on to myself to do that.
You just mentioned that match, that famous match y'all played at Roland Garros, where, I mean, hate to bring up bad memories. Everyone knows what happened to your ankle there. Would you say that is, so far in your career, your biggest career setback, that match against him at Roland Garros?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. It's not because I lost that match, right? Like, everybody keeps saying, like, oh, I would have won a match. Well, actually, technically speaking, he was up a set, mm-hmm. right, when it happened. It was an incredible match. I felt like I was playing some of the best tennis of my life. But the thing that kind of not killed me, but the thing that was so upsetting to me was, like, just imagine, I lose that match, right? I lose that match as Rafa on clay at Roland Garros. Like, millions of people lost to him there. But the one thing that people don't realize, I was 45 points away from the number one spot for 3 months. I needed to win one match, just one match at any tour level tournament to become world number one. That's the thing that hurt me the most. Right, because I was playing the best tennis of my life. Like in 2021, I won 6 titles. I won the Olympic gold medal. I won the World Tour Finals. I won 2 Masters events. And then 2022 started. I started off playing well as well. I made semis of Monaco, finals of Madrid, semis of Rome, semis of Roland Garros. And then the ankle injury happens. Like I lose that match, fine, but I go to Halle and I make quarters of Halle. I'm world number one. Right, that's the thing that yeah. killed me, because, and I knew that, but I was like, I broke 7 ligaments and shattered 3 yeah. bones, so there's really not much I can do about it. And even without that, the way I was playing, I felt like I was in my best ever position to win a Grand Slam, to win Wimbledon, to win US Open, to win something big, because the way I was playing.
This gets debated a lot, of which generation is better. Not necessarily the top guys. We'll get into that. But the guys like 5 to 10 to 15. So, you know, early in your career, the Berdiches, Wawrinkas, Del Potros, Ferrers, compared to today's level of guys that, you know, fluctuate from 5 to 15. You know, we all have our opinions on it.
No, I know. I mean, I know your guys. I know Sam thinks that the 80s is like the golden generation. You know,
no one was beating Berdych.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've beaten him like 5 times, but that's okay. No, so like I always say, the biggest difference is tennis has changed. Like everybody hits the ball so hard. Like everybody kind of has a similar game style nowadays. Like there's not really the finesse of of Roger, or like there's not really like the top spins of Rafa, and like, yeah, Carlos has that a little bit, but then everybody else kind of plays the same way, you know. Some just are playing better than others. Like Sinner kind of plays very, very fast, smacking the ball. Fritz like smacks the ball. Me, when I play well, I smack the ball. Like Draper smacks the ball, Rublev smacks the ball. Like everybody kind of just hits the ball as hard as they can. So I think in that regard, tennis has become a lot faster. But like name-wise, I think, yeah, David Ferrer, you know, Thomas Berdych, Stan Wawrinka, Del Potro, I'm probably missing someone. Those names were big. I mean, you know, those were very, very big names. But I think tennis-wise, tennis has improved, for sure. Tennis for sure has improved. And I think the, like, from 15 to 30, those guys have improved. Like, before, you really rarely saw at a Grand Slam, like, a David Ferrer lose to someone 30 in the world, right? Like, that just didn't happen. Or, like, a Thomas Berdych lose to, I don't know, who was it, like Demir Djumur or someone like that, right? Like who was ranked 28 in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that just didn't used to happen. Where I think now it's kind of like a Rublev can lose to Cerundolo at the French Open, or like Alex Dimitrov, or I don't know, I'm probably taking bad examples, but like, or Tommy Paul can beat Casper Ruud, you know what I mean? Like there's not that big of a difference between like the top 10 guys, how it used to be.
You've changed my mind basically based on your answer. Just so you
what?
Know.
What was your answer?
No, I'm not like pro 80s guys anymore. Like after listening to that, you've like convinced me like, you know what? This is a good era.
Well, I think the era is just different.
Yeah. No, you said it
like,
perfectly.
Back then, like in the quarterfinals of a slam, you probably had 6 of the top 8 players every single time. Yeah. No? Like if you had more than 2 or 3 not there, that was like a massive surprise. And Isner made it like his number 10, I think, right?
I don't worry about it. I got it.
Facts are not
we don't
important.
Need to go there.
Well, he lost to me the year I won it. So I was very
you were playing ridiculous there. No,
I was returning ridiculous. I remember that.
You were playing absurd.
But actually, it's not dissimilar now. Like if you look at it, Sinner is a lock. Alcaraz is a lock. I would say, I mean, Novak is a lock. I'll probably say I'm more or less there.
We'll say it. You're a lock.
Yeah. Fritz is a lock.
Unless Sam picks you the rest of the year.
Yeah, don't pick me. Fritz is a lock. Draper is locked. And that's 6.
Yeah.
So you got like 7 Musetti, 8 Shelton, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like those, like there's basically 2 spots to play for. And then you got Casper Ruud, Tommy Paul, those guys. So it's not dissimilar, but I think before, like in all the big events, you could kind of count for them. That was the big difference.
Well, these answers have been great, Alex. We're going to go now to a bit of a fun segment. As good as your answers were, we're going to transition to a fun segment. I'm going to start here. And we did this because I know you're an avid listener of the Nothing Major pod. So I know you saw this come out about 11 months ago when we first started the pod. We each chose 3 players that we would want to go to Las Vegas with. And so I'm going to ask you that question. Who are your 3 players, current or former, that you'd like to go to Las Vegas with and party?
Marat Safin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Alexander Bublik. I went out with him a few times. So we're quite good friends now. I don't know. Who's the third? My friends are all boring, so I'm not going to pick them. You know, I'll go Bjorn Borg. He likes to party these days.
Yeah, wow. That's a good one.
He's so young. Huh?
He looks so good.
We had some good time with the Laver Cup together.
I'm sure you guys
had some
won
really
every
good
year.
Time.
I'm sure you did. We never could beat you.
Well, you did. You did. When the 2 times I didn't play, Team World won.
I wasn't on the team.
Yeah.
All right, next one. You're in a Grand Slam final, and you got to play one of the 4 members from the pod. Assume we're all playing great. Who are you taking?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, come on.
Dude, never lost a set to you.
All right, yeah, I know. No.
Who else am I going to pick?
No, that's
I mean,
the right answer.
I'm definitely not picking Jack.
I don't have a rebuttal again. That's the right answer.
I mean, I'm not picking Jack for sure because at times I had no idea what the hell to do against him. I'm not picking John simply because he can have a serving day where you're just not going to touch him. I didn't play enough against Stevie, to be honest. I played him twice, I think. I played him twice, when like once when I was 17 and once when I was just, I think, already top 10 in the world. So it's kind of tough to compare.
We know you don't want any piece of the backhand to backhand rally.
No, yeah, that's Sam, the right answer.
Sam's the right answer there for you.
Sam's the answer.
Yeah.
Sam's the answer.
Sorry, easy, that one.
So I got one. What's the story, if there is one, with the gold chains? I feel like, you know, now that we all do commentary, I notice this when we call your matches. It's every point, you're tucking them back into the shirt. Do you ever think about just taking them off and not dealing with it?
I've had them since I'm a little kid. I got three chains, and the three chains, I'm from three different people, and who are very important to me. So, I mean, one, I have the same chain as my brother. Then the second chain is the same chain that my mother has. So I have two of those. And the third one is with the two area signs. The small one my grandma gave me when I was little. And then the big one she gave me when I grew up and was an adult. So, yeah, that's the story with the three chains. And some people have tattoos with a meeting. Some people have different kind of things. I have the chains. I'm not going to take them off as long as I live.
I know, and I think a lot of people know, that you're a big dog lover.
Yeah.
What no one knows is, a long time ago at the Miami Open, Alex and I went to the Miami Humane Shelter. This guy loves dogs so much, he adopted a dog right there on the spot. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, because he was living in Tampa at the time. So it wasn't like, you know, we were in Miami. He had his place in Tampa. But are you guys, your family, are y'all still traveling with dogs on the road? I know you used to every single week. Now that I'm off tour, I don't know.
That's unbelievable. So you know what happened here in Toronto? I'm actually quite pissed about that a little bit, to be honest. So my father was in Monaco during the training week. I was in Mallorca, and I traveled from Hamburg because I had some things to do with some sponsors in Hamburg. But my father flew from Monaco to here, to Toronto. So the older dog, I think, you know, he's already old.
Lovik.
Yeah, Lovik. He's dad's dog. So when mom arrived, the son of Lovik, who we also have, kind of went to my mom, blah, blah, blah. But then they drove my dad to the airport, and Lovik wouldn't let go of my dad when my dad had to fly to Canada. So guess what he did? He just brought him with him to Canada. So now he has a dog with him every single practice that we go to. Like,
what, sits on his
lap. Yeah. So Lovik sits on his lap while I'm training, and he's not really like kind of coaching me, because he's busy with the dog and the dog is hot, so he has to give him water, and he's like giving ice towels and stuff like that during training. I'm like, how the hell did you do that? Like, the dogs were supposed to come to Cincinnati with my mom. Just leave them there. Like, no, he wouldn't let go of me. I had to take him with me.
Alex, I don't want to ask you your like best or favorite match of all time. Do you have like the worst match of all time? Like, where you just remember you played awful?
Yeah, I think any match this year, probably.
All right.
Yeah. guys, four in the race. He's so bad this year.
Yeah, there's a few matches that come to mind. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but I had like a period of time where I just couldn't put a second serve in the court.
Yeah.
Like, for like a year and a half, I was serving like 20-something double faults a match.
But you were still top 10. That's pretty impressive.
It's top
five, maybe.
Yeah, I know.
That's really impressive.
And I was still like winning Masters events at times. Like, I won Madrid without a second serve. Like, I beat in Madrid that week. I beat Nishikori, I beat Dan Evans, I beat Nadal, and I beat Thiem, and I beat Berrettini without a second serve. I just couldn't put a second serve in the court. But like, one of the worst matches last year, I played. Oh my god. He's going to hate me for that. But I played my German fellow countryman in Acapulco. I played against Daniel Altmaier. That was the worst tennis match I think I've ever played in my entire life. Like, you know, it was one of the matches, like, your serve is just not working. Your forehand is terrible. Well, my forehand is always terrible. But my forehand was terrible. My backhand, I played like Steve Johnson with two hands. Like, not a slice Steve Johnson, like two hands.
It's not good.
I couldn't volley. I just couldn't do anything. It was such a horrific match. And he had a wild card that week. I don't know why he would get a wild card in Mexico, to be honest, but he had one. I think he lost like 2-2 the next round to like Kecmanovic or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, I am so bad at this sport. It was phenomenal.
You mentioned how bad your second serve could be at times, but do you remember that match we played at Madrid? I think it might have been in the quarterfinals. We brought this up on the podcast because I just remember you had a good serving day, and I'm a terrible returner. We all know that. But did you know that you did not lose a single point on second serve the whole match?
I didn't have a single break point against me the entire tournament.
There you go. I'm vindicated. No. He was serving unbelievable.
But to not lose
a point on second serve, is that because Alex's second serve is so good or your return was so bad?
He was playing exceptionally well that week.
It was Madrid. It was obviously very, very bouncy. But the balls used to be different, man. It was so easy to serve in Madrid. Like my first serve used to bounce over the fence.
It was bad.
It was so nice to play there. And now everything changed. Now we're playing with like little kids' balls, like those fluffy little toys. I hate them.
So you really think there's a difference right now in the balls between right now as opposed to 5 years ago?
Yeah, post-COVID. Post-COVID, they changed. They changed. I think they're cutting costs, and they did that during COVID, and I feel like they think nobody noticed, and they just keep doing it. But yeah, the balls, it's not even the fur. The balls have no air inside them. Like, there's no pressure in the balls. So, like, you hit the ball, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like kids' balls, like the red and yellow ones, and those.
Yeah.
That's what they feel like. It's unbelievable.
All right, so who is the most annoying person to play against for you? Somebody you struggle with that doesn't make any sense.
For me, the most obvious answer is Daniil Medvedev. I mean, I lost to him like 78 times, to be honest. even now, like I'm ranked 3 in the world and he's ranked, I don't know, 14. I still lose to him in Halle. He turns into prime Novak Djokovic every time he plays against me. And I'm like, I don't even play that bad. Like, why am I losing? But like outside of the like...
Somebody random.
He's got a winning record against... He's not like us, Stevie.
No, I'll tell you.
He's 0-7 against Jeremy Shardy.
Sorondolu, I'm 0-3 against him and I won one set.
Oh, okay.
I won one set against him in 3 matches.
All on clay?
All on clay. Twice in Madrid, though. I have 3 losses in Madrid in my entire career, and 2 of them came against him. No, I have 4 losses in my career in Madrid, and I had 2 against him, and both straight sets. And I just felt like a complete fool. No idea what I was doing.
The good Cerundolo. He's nasty.
The good Cerundolo.
Cerundolo, no idea what to do against him. Well, you know what we should do once? Because we have the cramping again. Look at this.
Yeah, you need to, dude, you need Jesus, more man. Than just water tonight. You need, like...
We need to ask Sasha and Cincy. We need his European pet peeves of America.
American pet peeves in America?
What grind your gears? We did a thing like what annoys us in Europe. No air conditioning, no ice, small elevators, small cars, you know, bad internet, everything. We're having fun with it. In America? Just give us one thing.
Food quality.
Valid.
Yeah. Food quality valid. Is unbelievable here. Like... And I don't just say that, but like I'm a diabetic, as probably most of you guys know. Like, there's some weeks in the US where it doesn't matter how much insulin I put in my body, it's uncontrollable. It's not possible. Like
funny.
You guys have no, but seriously, you guys have sugar and bread.
Yeah,
I know it's not great.
Ingredients of bread in America, it says sugar. How the hell do you put sugar in it? Or like sugar and rice. Sugar pasta, like what? Like you don't need to put sugar in everything.
So you're saying that the pasta in Rome is better than the pasta at Carrabba's Italian Grill in Mason?
Cramping.
He's full on cramping. You can see it. All right, I think we should end it there.
Yeah.
American food is terrible. That's why I'm cramping.
You're in Toronto.
You're in Canada.
It's the same thing.
This is going to be really good for social. Do you mind if we put that out on Instagram? Yes. Cramping on the podcast?
It's so good.
Oh, my God, man. Help me, I'm up. I can't. Help me, I'm up yet. Put my up.
This is classic.
The physio stretch.
Get the physio, the first ever physio stretch on nothing major.
Good thing someone was nearby.
Bye, Natasha.
Unbelievable. Yeah, he's cramping. I feel bad now. He wasn't hydrating.
I know. And I feel bad too.
Yeah. Hey, Alex.
Yeah, you. Thank you. Sorry.
No, thank you, dude.
Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks again to Alexander Zverev for his time and sticking it out with us. I mean, the dude was fighting full body cramps. by the end of the pod. It's just super tough questions we ask. He was under the gun. So thank you, Alex. On Monday's episode, we're going to continue this ugly strokes heated debate that we got into last Monday. We're going to finish that. We're going to conclude that on Monday. I want to see what everyone else thinks. We're also going to announce the winner of the one of one signed Nothing Major birthday poster. That's currently in my possession. It's up to me to sign it and then ship it off to Jack. And then Jack's going to ship it to California, but it's going to make its way around. And that winner's also going to receive the three different colorways of our hats, the white, the green, and the black. So that's it. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday, and we'll see you next time.
All right, everyone, this episode of Nothing Major is sponsored by Vuori. I actually own Vuori pre-doing this ad, and I would wear it to pick the kids up at school. I'd wear it to the gym. For me, Vuori stuff is all about versatility and comfort.
Yeah, and I've got their core short on right now. I pretty much live in those shorts. They're the most comfortable shorts that I have probably ever owned in my life. And, you know, I've got a couple pairs pretty much that are in my rotation at all times. And, you know, I can't wait to get those shorts on every day when I get up.
Everyone where I live... Where's Vuori? Where you live too?
I know. I'm about 200 yards from the shop right now, actually from my house. So I might actually walk down there later and see if I can get this in-store discount, but I might have to go online.
It's trendy. It's trendy right now. If I go pick up the boys at school, the dads and the moms, they're all wearing
Vuori.
So guys, use that 20% off Vuori.com/nothingmajor. Head there now.